From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a photographer went on a trip to finally meet his girlfriend's family. They'd been dating for 5 months, and when they left for her family's lakeside home, he asked her, "Do they know I'm black?" She assured him they're a progressive, loving family. They would accept him with open arms, and they did a whole lot more than that. I don't want to give too much away, and this hour will contain some serious spoiler alerts, so please be advised. The photographer I'm describing is Chris, played by Daniel Kaluuya in the extraordinary film Get Out. It was nominated for Best Picture, won for Best Script. Only the sixth horror film, by the way, ever nominated for Best Picture, but it was much more than a horror film. It was a stinging social commentary, among other things. The winner of Best Picture, of course, was The Shape of Water, which has some fans of science fiction wondering if it's bringing sci-fi or fantasy films back to the mainstream. And how about Frances McDormand's speech, imploring Hollywood to start using something called an inclusion rider and celebrating women who were nominated? We have a lot to discuss in the wake of the Oscars 2018. My guests in studio include the great Linda Maroney, director and programmer for the One Take Film Festival. Great to have you back here.
Thank you, Evan.
That's the first time anyone's introduced you as the great.
I know.
But I think you're great.
I need like a cape or something.
I think you're great. I'm always thrilled to talk to you, so thank you. Alongside Linda is Chris Thompson, an engineer, a comedian, an activist, and I'm always thrilled to talk to Chris, too. I think you're great, too.
Oh, thank you.
But now, all of a sudden, we're cheapening the word great.
No,
like
no,
The Shape
not.
Of Water. Was it great?
It was better than good.
Okay.
I liked it. Okay. I will say I liked it. Calling it great? I don't know. It was exactly what I expected from the director.
What I want to do this hour, listeners, from Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah, weird monsters, beautiful sets, and a little bit of blood. That's okay. That's what I signed up for. That's what I got. I was a satisfied customer.
Okay. But were you a customer going, "I'm satisfied, and by the way, that's the best film of the year"? Yeah, I don't think you're.
No.
Okay.
No.
So listeners, and so interestingly enough, this morning I mentioned on our social media feeds, on Twitter, I finally saw Get Out last night. And I cannot wait to talk about that film. It blew me away. I haven't seen The Shape of Water. And I talked to some colleagues and friends who saw it, and they didn't get it. They thought it was sort of off-putting, couldn't wait for it to end. But when I mentioned that on Twitter, whoa, the fans of The Shape of Water came after me, said, "We're missing the point," including Rob Braden behind the glass, who might come right through the glass and grab a microphone. So if you want to join the conversation, we're talking about, you know, the impacts of the many sort of themes that we're discussing this hour. It's 844-295-TALK if you want to join the conversation this hour. But let me ask both of you, what do you think the big stories of Oscar 2018, Chris?
I think the biggest thing was the winners were a lot more diverse. Actually, the nominees were a lot more diverse, and it felt a little bit more genuine. Like, they weren't just, like, tokening because they messed up and didn't want another Oscars so white thing. It really felt like the new people in the Academy actually had a say in who was getting nominated.
Okay.
I would completely agree with that. I would say the median age for voting Oscar members is definitely coming down, and that's changing the dynamics. You know, it's a lot of money to run for an Oscar campaign, and it is called a campaign for a certain reason. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. And I think, you know, people that are voting are just having different viewpoints than they did long ago.
Okay, but let me flip that on its head a little bit here. Here's the Time Magazine headline. "The number of women who won Oscars this year is depressing." And Time Magazine writes that this year, 4 women took home Oscars in categories not specifically designed for actresses. Best actress in a supporting role, best actress in a lead role. So a total of 6 women winning Oscars, lowest number in many years, I think, at least 6 years. So how are you feeling about that?
Yeah, not so great. But it's exciting to see Rachel Morrison get nominated for cinematographer, which has never happened before. So that's a huge step forward. I think, you know, there's been certain areas where women have been allowed to sort of excel in the industry, and cinematography is definitely not one of them. But I think that's definitely changing at this point now.
I know a lot of conversations have been had since Frances McDormand, who won for Best lead actress, brought up the term inclusion rider. If you missed that, let's listen briefly to her on stage. This is during her accepted speech for Best Lead Actress, and right after she asked all of the women who had been nominated for all of the categories to stand up and sort of wave and acknowledge each other, she said this.
Okay, look around, everybody. Look around, ladies and gentlemen, because we all have stories to tell and projects we need financed. Don't talk to us about it at the parties tonight. Invite us into your office in a couple days, or you can come to ours, whichever suits you best, and we'll tell you all about them. I have two words to leave with you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Inclusion rider.
All right, inclusion rider, which, Linda, again, if, for people who have missed that, how do you define what an inclusion rider is?
That people usually well above the line get to put a rider into their contract saying, you know, people of color, people, women, all sorts of minorities have to be included in the production of whatever film it is. And this is typically big Hollywood movies, not necessarily independent, you know, films. But I think, you know, people's feet are starting to be held to the fire in a public way. And I think that is going to change the dynamic of things going forward.
In terms of what projects get made, who gets included in the projects, in terms of what?
All of it. All of it. I mean, it has to at this point. I think, you know, I'm hoping that we're sick of sort of seeing the same movies over and over and over and over again. It's like, you know, it would be great to have ice cream for dinner, but if you have ice cream for dinner every single night, you're going to get sick of it after a while. You want something else.
Okay. So Chris Thompson, do you view McDormand calling for an inclusion rider? She was talking about women at that moment, but is there a broader context in making the industry consider who's making what projects and who's included in those projects?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, just look at, like, yes, she specifically had all the women stand up, but if she had all the people of color stand up, you'd see, like, half of the audience would be standing up. Everybody who, like, had any part in making a movie or starring in a movie or promoting it. So I think it was important. I was all for her speech. Well, first I expected Meryl Streep to win because that's just what she does.
Because she's Meryl Streep.
No way.
Right. But, yeah, as soon as she got up and the, you know, the last two words of her speech were inclusion rider, I was like, okay, I'm okay with it.
by the way, I did not expect Meryl Streep to win because people are not going to like this, but let's just do this. I saw the post. Do you see the post?
No.
Do you see the post?
I did not.
I did not like it. I did not think it was a good movie. I thought Tom Hanks was bad.
You're not the first person I've heard that.
I thought he was bad. I thought he was cartoonishly bad.
Mm-hmm. It seemed rushed.
It seemed like it was a rushed product. And as a journalist and as someone who defends journalism, I'm all for the message of the movie, but it sort of felt like a movie that Hollywood liberals make when they want to hit everyone on the head with the value of journalism and to push back against so-called fake news. It was a strange. I found the story itself, the historical story is fascinating, but the film I thought was schlocky. Mm. Did not like it at all. And so I was happy to see it.
Tell us how you really feel.
I know. And as a journalist, I wanted to like it. I went in there and I'm going, wow. Probably because Tom Hanks was doing a role that had already been done in All the President's Men that nobody else, Jason Robards owns that character. So anyway, but that's how I felt about that. And by the way, I love Tom Hanks. Everybody calm down. I just didn't like the movie. I liked the story. But I thought if I had a vote, and I'm glad I don't have a vote because I don't see very many movies with a six-year-old. I see, you know, like Paw Patrol. I think things like that. But I don't see how anything is a better film than Get Out. It was an amazing film, and I want to ask both of you what you thought of the film.
Loved it.
Spoiler alerts, by the way. You're going to need spoiler alerts coming up because we are going to talk a little bit about plot, but we're going to try not to go overboard. Go ahead.
Yeah, I loved it. I watched it. My goal since I first heard of it was to watch it in a black theater, watch it in a white theater, and then just do a comparison of reactions.
Yeah, what happened?
I got to see it in the black. I was down in New York for work, and I saw it in a quote-unquote traditionally black theater. Like, you know, it was a pretty diverse audience, honestly. And it was everything I expected it to be. Did not get to see it in white theater. I planned on coming up back up to Rochester and watching it at, like, I don't know, a little or something like that. Didn't get to do that, but it was an amazing experience. It was all the plot or all the points where you're supposed to be, you know, frightened, I was genuinely frightened. Like the way that it played out, like there were parts where it was like, uh-oh, well, I guess I see how this is going. I thought there was going to be like a Romero thing at the end, and he completely turned everything that I thought on its head. It was just great.
What did you think, Linda?
Oh, I loved it. I thought, you know, the writing, everything was just so tight about that film. The writing was amazing. The casting was amazing. The acting was phenomenal. Editing, I mean, all around, it was just such a solid film. I love the casting of Bradley Whitford, you know, as the dad. I thought he was, you know, we have a viewpoint of him from West Wing that we sort of hold up on some level. And it's like, you know, it was great throwing him in there in that part. I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
The only complaint I have is I'm squeamish about blood. I didn't know if I needed cutting the brains and stuff, but I understand I'm in the minority there, so and I'll get over that part. But I want to listen to a couple of sound clips. First of all, Daniel Kaluuya played Chris, who is the protagonist in the film, a black photographer who's dating a white woman and meeting their family and starting to realize something creepy is going on. But before he fully understands something really sinister is going on, he has to deal with, you know, I guess let's kind of like put it this way here. Director Jordan Peele has said that part of what he wants to do with this film is shine a light on so-called allies, to ask white people who think that they're progressives to think about their behavior in certain social situations or in life. And part of how he does that in the movie is show how white people sometimes talk to black people in ways that are meant to show solidarity or a connection, but are actually clumsy, awkward, or even racist. And there's a party scene where there's a lot of wealthy white people, and Chris is there, and they are all coming up to him. An old golf pro comes up to him and says, I know Tiger. You know, and they're saying all these, like, you know, like these really remarkably clumsy things at the very least. You know, Chris's girlfriend's dad, Bradley Whitford, says I would have voted for Obama for a third term, you know. And this is what Daniel Kaluuya, who plays Chris, said in describing his feelings on that scene and how it relates to lived experiences.
I do think that being black in a white environment is quite specific. And it has its own specificity of weirdness, and just because I think racism is really weird. I think racism is a really weird thing for people to have, the script at the party scene. There's a party scene in it, and I was like, and when everyone was kind of trying to make Chris feel welcome and comfortable by keeping on asking him questions about blackness, and I was like, I've been to that party. I go to that party. I'm going to that party soon. I don't know when. It's like I know that. I know that. And that's. I don't know if any other. That's the same. You know. I don't think that's the same. I don't think it manifests in the same way when people go, I'm really cool with this. Yo, have you seen this basketball game? I go, bro, I'm English. I don't care about basketball, man. I watch football, bro. And it's that kind of thing. Yeah.
Remarkable. That's why this one small example of why this movie is not just a horror film, we do a disservice by just calling it a horror film. Chris, your thoughts on what Daniel's describing, what Jordan Peele wanted to do with that?
Well, living in Rochester for 9 years after living in Baltimore for nearly 14, I completely got what he was talking about. Like, I have been to those parties, and like everything he's talking about is stuff that a lot of black people have experienced, and usually we have no choice but to experience, because if we're going to be out in the world in general, it's going to happen. You know, like every corporate event that I go to, every house party that I'm invited to, I worry about those uncomfortable conversations. It's gotten a lot better. I notice this is one thing. I feel like it's gotten a lot better since the movie came out, like the last couple of months, people don't try to throw those things in.
What do people say to you?
Just like over patronizing behavior. Like when I was younger, you know, there'd be like talks of why I'm not playing basketball or I should join the company basketball team. It's like, have you seen me even try to pick up a pen? Like, this is not gonna happen. Just talking about things, like one thing that I love is there's always one white dude at the party who thinks he's down, who will recite to you like obscure hip hop lyrics. And I'm like, okay, great. I don't know who that is. Like, how do you not know that? You're not really down with hip hop. I was like, well, not that song or not that artist. Like, there's always one. There's always one every party I go to.
A white guy doing hip hop. Are they trying to show credentials of being sort of?
I think they're trying to get their hood passed, but like that's not something that exists. So you don't get one. Like, it's just like, okay, yeah, great. You know Jam Master Jay's birthday. That's fine. Doesn't mean anything to me. And I mean, Run DMC means something to me, but like you knowing that, good for you.
And it comes up in a way that's totally inorganic, right?
Right. Like I'll be talking about how good the pasta salad is, and then, you know.
By the way,
right,
they'll drop the Ricky Gervais as the boss in the original BBC version of The Office. Ricky Gervais's character goes up to the only black guy in the office and says, "You know who my favorite actor is of all time? Sidney Poitier."
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just like that.
I'm like, great.
Why?
Well, why are we talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Daniel is saying it happens. And this is something that, you know, again, I never have to experience. And my goodness, I hope I'm not the guy doing that. I mean, but I think part of what Jordan Peele wanted us to do is see how sometimes it's well-intended and subconscious. But I want to ask you, does it hurt? Is it awkward? Is it demeaning? How does
it's okay? So it's only awkward if you make it awkward, but it does generate like at least an internal eye roll, and what that does to me is like when that person does that, I'm just like kind of turned off of them. Like it doesn't matter what they say after that. I'm just like, I don't really want to talk to you. And then I'll just go off and talk to other people.
I mean, how many white people are going to go up to their black friends at the next party and be like, you know what film I love this year? Black Panther.
I think, well...
But the problem is I loved Black Panther.
Yeah, everybody loves Black Panther. That's the problem. Like,
I know.
Now I don't know. But like,
I know, Get Out was so good. I was sort of hoping not to like it for that reason. Because now I look patronized. It was truly a remarkable film. And in a moment, we're going to talk a little bit about an alternative ending because Scott Pukas from The Little Theater and Upstairs, hello, Scott. They do great work at The Little, of course, and The Little Podcast. And Scott is mentioning that the alternative ending is profound. And we'll do that in just a second. But first, let's listen to what Jordan Peele said, among many things, about writing this film. He was writing it during the Obama administration, during which he perceived things even... well, a little more different than they are now, I guess. And let's listen to what he said about some of his goals and about when he was writing this film.
I wrote the movie primarily during the post-racial lie. So the Obama era, when everyone was saying, hey, we're past racism, right?
We did it.
And the notion of sort of bringing up racism was almost thought of as like the perpetuating it.
Uh-huh.
And so the movie was originally meant to be a more direct, brutal wake-up call to say, no, the horror movie, guess what? The horror movie with a black protagonist, the cops showing up at the end, is a different, that's a different thing. And it became very clear by showing people the movie that they needed a hero.
That's why the ending changed. So here comes a big spoiler alert. Please go see this film and just for the next few minutes, do something else. Don't let us ruin this for you. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, in Get Out, the film ends with police rolling up on a scene after, well, there's a lot of death, and to put it, again, not to spoil too much here, but Chris, the protagonist who is, again, a black guy, is covered in blood, and he's on the scene of this country road, and there is a dead white woman in the road, and there's more bodies strewn about, and police roll up. And... it sounds to me, Chris, like what Jordan Peele is saying there is the original ending, which is now the alternative ending, he switched it because he feels like at the time people are kind of, he didn't want it to be too much of a downer of an ending. I'm sure you're familiar with the alternative ending, right?
Yeah, didn't he get killed?
No. In the In the alternative ending, it's just a regular police officer, and they see the black guy in the scene, and they arrest him. And the movie ends with him in prison 6 months later, being visited by his friend, who is the funniest actor of all time, who plays his friend in this movie.
Man, so good.
And his friend comes, and he's trying to piece together evidence to get him out of prison, and Chris tells him, it's okay. I'm good. I'm over this. He understands he's going to be in prison. That's his life. There's nothing he's going to do to turn around. Even though he was a victim in this movie, he's going to be cast as the guy who committed all these crimes. And Jordan Peele wanted the audience initially to be left with the image of a black man wrongfully imprisoned.
Ooh. I thought that the cop was supposed to come on and shoot him immediately. Because that's what I was talking about with the Romero ending, because that's the way Night of the Living Dead ended. Like, he pretty much, you know, he was a sole survivor. He saved his own life. He got out alive and then immediately got shot in the head because people thought that he was something that he wasn't. So I assumed that he was going to do that with an alternative ending.
Yeah,
but
so
that's
powerful.
Even deeper.
Powerful. Black man in prison as a director. You know, and you hear him, Linda, saying he kind of wrestled with the audience needs a hero here. And
right.
He went with the ending that he went with, which, again, we won't spoil it. How do you like the choice?
I think it was a great choice. I think when I watched it and I saw the headlights roll up, I was like, oh, God, this is not going to be good, right? Because there's so much of that social commentary going through the film. And you're just like, okay, this is going to be true and accurate to what our expectations are at this point, right? And either way, if he ends up in jail, if he ends up dead, just not good. So when he didn't, spoiler alert, it was so like, oh my God, this is not what I expected at all. And so it had that moment of going, this is great.
And this is why Jordan Peele's a genius.
Yeah.
Because he chose the ending that he did go with, knowing that in his own words, he could have his cake and eat it too. He could have that police car roll up and the audience is going to go, oh no. Because they know the dynamics and they know what so often happens. But then they get the relief. So you get both. Instead of the initial ending, which you only got one, and you walked out of there kind of on a downer. He's brilliant. What a wonderful, because the point you're just making, you still had that feeling.
Yeah.
And that's powerful.
Exactly. Exactly. And there's no taking that away.
Yeah. So are you happy with the ending?
I'm very happy with the ending. I'm glad he didn't go with the alternative one for, you know, Matt's release. we needed it. We need an up. Like, in times like this, we need some sort of upper.
That's exactly what Jordan Peele is saying. Let me grab a phone call. Travis in Rochester on the film Get Out. Go ahead, Travis.
Hi, what's up?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Sorry. No, first of all, I want to say that it's awesome that director Romero's Night of the Living Dead is being referenced in this conversation, because I think that's the greatest horror film of all time. As a horror film fan, I've always thought that not every horror film, but horror movies kind of have like a bad rap to them. They're oftentimes hyper-generalized into these exploitative and substanceless pieces of disposable entertainment. However, horror films and genre in general, I feel like, are representative of American culture, especially through the decades, more so than people want to give them credit for. I'm a huge fan of George Romero's films. They have a lot of strong anti-patriarchal themes, but they're within the context of the story, which I think transcends audiences, so then people can watch them on a surface level as dark fantasies, but if they want to look for something, they can interpret it as such. But a movie like Get Out, which I thought was good, but I didn't love it, I thought a lot of what you people are talking about in terms of the social interaction a lot of white people think that they want to be hip, but they're really just, they're being blatantly racist, but they are socially deluded within this echo chamber of not realizing that they're doing so. I thought those moments were great. However, some of its story structure I thought was kind of derivative and predictable. That could also be me coming from a bias where most of my formative years was spent in the basement just watching VHS.
Well, Travis, let me ask you. Travis, can I ask you a question?
Of course.
The first time you saw Get Out, did you know the twist of what was really going on before you saw the movie?
I didn't know the twist before I saw the movie. I watched it, and I watched it with a friend of mine in about 20 minutes, and I was like, wait a minute. Okay, I think I get it. And they were like, and my friend was like, are you sure? And I was like, I don't know. This has like a Stepford Wives sort of feel to it. I'm also familiar with Jordan Peele's style. You know, I can tell he's a horror fan or a movie fan because some of the cultural references he makes in like his show or in his, some of the sketches or some of the stylistic choices he chooses, I could see are that of other genre movies. So watching Get Out, and also, I mean, I don't mean to sound desensitized. I don't mean to sound like the movie didn't have any merits. It's just that I think I've watched so many movies that about 30 minutes into it, I was like, wait a minute. There's that lawn man who's running. He just made reference to
Jesse
one
Owens.
Of the family members being a jogger. Oh, like, this is going to connect somehow. Wait, are they harvesting?
Okay. See, Trev, I got to cut the call. I almost did a big spoiler. I had to dump the call. Travis, thank you for the phone call. So, okay, I want to ask both of our guests in studio, because this will be interesting for our listeners who haven't seen Get Out. Did you see it knowing what the twist was going to be before you saw it?
I had an idea. Like, just the title kind of gives it away what's going on. But, like, just, I had an idea, like, a good, I think, yeah, like Travis said, like, about 30 minutes in, I had a really good idea what was really going on with this house, or with this family. And
so it didn't catch you by surprise.
Well, it definitely didn't catch me by surprise. And then when they finally got to the garden party, I was like, okay, well.
we see what's going on now.
Mm-hmm. Because there was a one guy, his friend or somebody, who was at the party, who was married to somebody at the party. And, you know, something happened with him where he kind of like snapped out of it. And I was like, okay. Well, I know exactly what's going on, but now I want to know what exactly are they doing, or how are they, you know, how are they executing?
So you're still interested, but you started to see it coming. Linda, did you?
I didn't. I knew something was up, but I didn't know exactly what it was. I'm not a huge horror person, if you could imagine that. I think I was saying to Chris earlier, I probably destroyed myself when I took home The Exorcist by myself to watch at night at like 15 years old, and I still have not gotten through that movie. But I definitely knew something was up. You know, the party scene was very reminiscent of some other things. You know, I think so. I was, you know, I was definitely invested in it, wanting to know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. Another reason I think this film is great is it is going to reward repeat viewings, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. This is definitely a film that you want to watch more than once.
Because then you get to go back through and say, how did I miss this? Or, ah, this has a totally different meaning. There's a moment early in the film where the couple is driving out to her family's house and they hit a deer and a police officer stops. And the black guy wasn't driving, but he wants the license and registration anyway.
That literally happened to me once. Not the deer part, but me not driving and having to give up my license. I did it.
You did it?
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to get shot. It was in North Carolina. There was no way I was gonna, like, I was upset, but, you know, I also, like, I would rather be upset and alive than, you know, whatever would have happened had I refused. So.
So that moment, first of all, on its own, even without the context of then knowing what was actually happening, even in the first time through, is powerful. Mm-hmm. You got multiple interactions with police that have powerful moments in this film. And then, of course, on repeat viewing, you go, oh, I see what she was doing there. What she was doing is not what she wanted to make it seem like she was doing. Last thing I'm going to say before I come back to your phone calls is this. I saw an interview with Allison Williams, who plays Rose in this film. And I guess I got to do this again. Spoiler alert. She told one of the late night hosts that she is routinely approached by white viewers who say, awesome film, loved it. By the way, Rose was a victim too, right? She was just hypnotized. She
what?
Was actually good.
Come right? on. Oh,
man.
she says white people want Rose to be good. She wants, you know, there to be some good. She doesn't want, they don't want, you know, all of the white family to be evil. And she's like, nope. Not hypnotized. And they're like, you had to have been hypnotized. I thought, knowing Chris, I thought you would laugh at that.
Yeah, that remind. There were a couple of. Damian Young has a blog called Very Smart Brothers, and he had at least three articles just about Rose, and the power of pretty white women, and the evil that they can create. Sorry, Megan. I'm sure you're fine, but you know, don't mute my mic, please.
Let me go ahead and get back to your phone calls here. This is Carrie in Rochester. Go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, hi. I was so glad to hear that you're talking about this movie because I'm a real moviegoer fan, and this was by far my favorite movie like I've seen in a long time. Just because it crosses genres. I hate horror films, so the previous caller's really into them, and I almost didn't watch it because of that. But then I there was so much hype about the movie, and I saw it and just went, this is horror, it's comedy, it's documentary, it's just so real, and so I was really glad that you were focusing on it and appreciate it. And I was so glad at least Jordan Peele got the best screenplay, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Something like that. Yeah, that he was honored because to me he deserved to win, I thought. So great. I'm really glad you're focusing on it.
Carrie, thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. There's a great 9-minute or so clip of Jordan Peele responding to the conspiracy theories and fan theories on Reddit. And some of them are right on, and he says, you guys are consuming some interesting substances. But it's interesting to see him go through idea after idea. And some of them, you know, you hear this and you go, no. And he says, actually, yes, we did this for this reason. We did this for this reason. And that's easy to find, and I really recommend it. And Carrie's phone call, let me turn to the professional in the room, Linda Maroney, who's a director and programmer for the One Take Film Festival. You know, she's making the point that it crosses genres. How do you describe what Get Out is? What's the genre?
Well, didn't Jordan Peele say when it was nominated for a Golden Globe in like comedy, he did a tweet saying, no, it's actually a documentary, which I absolutely loved. Again, going to his brilliance. So I think this is a great piece of art. Look, we're having this conversation. All these people are calling in. It's hard to define. There's all these nuances. There's, you know, all this Reddit stuff that we're all having discussions about. Isn't that what a great piece of art is, to pull all this stuff together? I will go to documentaries here for one second, because they are movies too. And what I'm seeing coming down the pike now from a lot of filmmakers are these sort of very interesting films that aren't about just one thing anymore. They might be about race. They might be about economics and you know, agriculture, like so many things thrown into one film, because I think that's how a lot of conversations are happening now, that we're not just discussing things in specific boxes, but we're talking about intersections of the world as it is now and having fuller conversations. And I see more of that coming down the pike, which is really exciting.
All right. One more phone call on this. Then we'll get our only break of the hour and we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about Shape of Water. We're going to talk a little bit more about what Linda wants to see going forward, not just from Me Too, but from related movements about women in the film industry. So we'll get to that in a second. I just wanted to say before I take the next phone call, the opening scene in this movie does so many things. Number one, it's a testament to the team that is directing this movie, Get Out, that you can make a basic suburban street look really creepy, and it is very creepy. And what is the trope that some, I think, white people have, is that if they're walking down a street at night, they may, fairly or not, okay, obviously unfairly, get scared if they're approached by someone who's different. Well, this flips it on its head. This is a black man walking down a suburban street getting creeped out when a car seems to be following him. And Chris, I think, again, for our white listeners, and I'll put myself right in this category, we may forget just the anxiety that black men can feel in those circumstances.
Yeah. I think that first scene reminded pretty much every young black man of like the Trayvon Martin case.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's why Jordan did it. But like, that's definitely something that's happened that everybody's experienced. Once again, where you're in a strange environment and you're just trying to get to your house. Even when I was living in a suburb and walking around my own neighborhood, I felt that. And I don't think anybody called the police on me when I had when I was living there. But, I mean, there have been plenty of times where the police have been called on either me or my friends just for walking around. Or the Next Door app would get lit up with, like, suspectful black man in a hoodie walking, knocking on doors. It's like, yeah, he was going to a party. Like, it's just, yeah, genius.
Yeah. Again, it was a genius scene. There's so much to it. Kevin in Rochester next. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say I'm listening to your conversation, and I'm with the Rochester Association of Black Journalists, and we had actually shown this film in October. We had tried to get it before, but it was such a hot property for the black cinema series that we do in conjunction with the Little Theater. So we were able to get it in October, and you were talking about people seeing it again. We had numerous people that came out to see it and had seen it before. They were seeing it for the second, third time. And the spirited discussion that you're having there, we had an even more spirited discussion because we have panel discussions afterwards. So I just wanted to mention that our Black Cinema Series just celebrated 1 year in February, and we've also worked in cooperation with Linda there with her one-take film festival and had cross-pollination. So I just wanted to say that that film was a real hit in October, and it was, you know, time for Halloween. That probably helped bring out the crowd. And anyone interested in the Black Cinema Series, we've got it coming up again on March 23rd. The film is The Rape of Recy Taylor, and you can go to the Little website or the Rochester Association Black Journalists website.
Great stuff, Kevin, and that's something that we're going to talk about coming up on this program. So The Rape of Recy Taylor is going to be covered right here on Connections. Thanks for calling in, Kevin. Always good to hear from you. We'll talk to you soon.
Same here. Take care.
And listeners, if you're hearing, wait a second, Recy, didn't I hear that? What's that name? That's the name that Oprah invoked in her speech, one of the names that Oprah invoked in her speech at the Golden Globes. So that's Kevin Hicks. Thank you, Kevin, for that. Let's get our only break of the hour and come right back with our guests, Chris Thompson, a comedian, activist, engineer, Linda Maroney, who's the director and programmer for the One Take Film Festival. We'll come right back here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on the next Connections, an active shooter drill at MCC goes horribly wrong when MCC somehow didn't alert teachers and staff that it was just a drill. A lot of students thought it was real and were texting their families. We'll talk about what went wrong and what to learn from it. Second hour, athletes from amateur all the way up to Olympics often have eating disorders. We'll talk about treatment options. Talk to you Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Just a flood of feedback and a lot of people defending the shape of water, including Jillian, who says, I saw all the Oscar noms. Wow. All of the Oscar noms. I was dragged kicking and screaming to Shape of Water because the premise didn't appeal to me. I was so pleasantly surprised because it was impeccably done and doesn't ask the audience to take itself seriously too much. All performances were outstanding. A must for the big screen. Said Shape was the full package. So Jillian, among others, are saying that this was a film that, of course, it was sort of wonderfully weird. It was meant to be, but it had a message. Chris, did you find there to be social commentary, political commentary in Shape of Water as well?
Oh, all over it. All over it. It was like it was the 50s or 60s in Baltimore or like the Aberdeen Proving Grounds. I can't remember. But like it was right by the pier. You know, there's a mute woman who can only speak through sign. There's a black woman who's her best friend who's dealing with her own thing and has like a husband who's despondent for whatever reason. The guy, I forget his name. I want to call him Zod, but that's not him. You know, he's like quintessential, like he would be the hero type in any other movie because he captured the monster. But he's the actual monster, the person who's, you know, essentially othering something that's different that was minding its own business. You know, there was so many different themes in there that Del Toro was trying to get in, and I think he succeeded in that.
What's the genre that you put this film in?
Romantic horror? But it's not, the only scary thing, like the monster wasn't scary at all. The guy, the villain was a scary thing. But yeah, but I mean, it's a love story, but I don't know, fantasy. That's the thing with his movies. You can't put it all in one category. Like I've been following him since Pan's Labyrinth. It's the same thing. Like it's a horror, but it's a fantasy, but it's a children's story. Like it's everything.
Yeah, and so, Linda, there's been a number of think pieces that have come out since this film won Best Picture, saying, well, is this going to revive or bring mainstream cred for sci-fi or for fantasy? Do we overdo it with that just because it won Best Picture?
Well, I think, you know, you always have to remember that it is a business. And so if it makes a lot of money, there will be more similar films made like this. That's typically how it works. But there's also cycles, right? So for a while, you know, Westerns might be in vogue or musicals, and they sort of, you know, ebb and flow depending on, you know, box office, really. What's going to make money in Hollywood is what they're going to put more money back into.
It feels, and I'd like you to correct me if I'm wrong on this, it feels like we're at a moment where it is maybe a little easier to get films with political messages made. And our conservative listeners are going, oh, you think Hollywood's never been political? I get it. But it feels
like... You can hear them?
Yeah, I can. I can. Just these headphones.
Okay. Okay, fair enough.
But it feels like movies with a message, more than just throwaway films, have some traction right now, or maybe would be easier to get green-lighted.
Well, going back to documentaries, because that's my wheelhouse, you know, they've been making a lot of money in the last few years. There's been a huge boom, and Netflix has been buying them up nonstop because they can make money off of them. And they're also not just buying films that are made, but they're also putting money into documentaries and documentary series, which is really, really big. Our little, you know, Rochester Documentary Filmmakers Group came together and we made a short film on Election Day at Susan B. Anthony's gravesite the day after. We showed it at the first ever Meet the Press Film Festival down in D.C. And then NBC licensed the film from us for 2 weeks. So we made a little bit of money off a short documentary, which is kind of unheard of. But we're taking a section of that money and putting it in to create an annual grant for local Rochester-based documentary filmmakers. So again, it's you know, we're talking large scale right now, but it's also about what we're doing at home to make things more sustainable for our own community.
Is it still just as hard as I remember talking to friends like Matt Mann and some of the really talented filmmakers in this town who tell me, boy, it is so hard just to get into festivals, just to sort of recoup the investment and the time. Is it still just as hard?
It's just as hard because it's also that the equipment has come down in price. So to make a really good-looking film is so much cheaper. So many films are being made. Not everyone should be doing it, but there are so many more films being made. But, you know, it's harder to get your film seen above all the noise of all the other films out there. So that becomes really, really tricky and complex.
And so what are you working on now?
Oh, I can't really say yet.
Ooh,
oh, come
mystery.
On. You came on to break news.
No. Well, hey, we're starting a film grant. Isn't that really good?
That's news.
Yeah.
I like that.
Okay.
Well, besides that, let me ask you then, let's bring it back to sort of the Me Too, because the New York Times had their report on the Oscars 2018 was all about sort of women taking over, women taking charge, strength of women voices. Time's headline was the opposite. The number of women who won Oscars this year is depressing. And I'm curious to know if you sort of lean one way or the other, which feels more authentic to you, and what you think is going to happen now for women in the industry who want to be heard or who want to have their projects get made.
Well, being a documentary filmmaker, I think I have to be an optimist, you know, to get out of bed in the morning.
Yes.
So I want to think that things are going to change. I think things of this scale have never been as public as they are now. So it's once you're educated about something, you can't go back to not knowing something. Like, you can't. So hopefully things will start changing, you know. That's my hope.
What do you want to see? What's the most important change you think has to happen?
I want to see so many stories from people that I've never seen before. I think that's of such interest. You know, I'm tired of seeing the same types of stories over and over and over again. So there's so many parts of the world I haven't seen and I don't know things about, and places in this country that I'm so curious to see. You know, I mean, we have to tell stories, right? Storytelling is just in human DNA, that we need to understand who we are as people. We've been doing it since sitting around in caves, right? So that's not going to go away. But I want to know new stories from new voices.
Here are some of our many comments we've gotten on the films out there in Oscarland this year. Tom writes, Jordan Peele is a genius and America is so structurally racist that it literally hurts. Chris writes to us and says, I love thriller and horror movies, and they rarely capture my attention like Get Out did. I was completely engaged and on edge for almost the whole movie. Masterful suspense and buildup. Also, Rod for the win. Rod is such,
yes, Rod.
Such a great character. Again, I don't want to give too much away, but the supporting performance, it was...
The casting was
brilliant. It was just about as well cast a film as I can remember. I don't think there was a single weak link in the Get Out cast.
Yeah. I got to say something about that. Also, Rod being from the TSA, what people don't know about the TSA, I have a lot of respect for the TSA, not just because I fly all the time and don't want to get tagged. Like, the TSA hires the most, like, of all the civil offices, hires the most African-American people of color. They're the lowest paid and the most underappreciated when it comes to, like, pay raises. So him being from the TSA spoke a lot to me. And the fact that he was like a true hero in the movie spoke a lot, too.
Did they think of everything? Jordan Peele wove every little... There's almost no unintentional detail.
That man is smart.
Wow. I did not see Three Billboards.
I have not seen it.
I was told not to see it.
You were told not to see it.
Yeah, a lot of my friends saw it, and there's like unpunished racism, basically, by someone who gets to be a hero at the end, that they were just like, wait until it comes on Netflix. So
okay, because Tom writes to us on Twitter and says, does Three Billboards encourage vigilante behavior, heaving Molotov cocktails at a police station, road tripping it with a high-powered rifle to kill a guy after a bar fight? Why does this get a free pass today? I haven't seen it. I don't know.
Once I see it, I'll be able to answer that. But I'm going to go with maybe don't throw Molotov cocktails at police stations.
Anyone, maybe?
Or anyone. Or anybody. Like, I don't want to be set on fire like that.
It was, I think it was Dimitri Martin, the comedian, who says, there's a saying that says, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. Okay, how about no one should throw stones?
it's just,
don't throw Molotov cocktails. I don't know, Tom. I haven't seen that film, so I can't comment on that. I do want to ask the director in the room. It's easier for you to answer this because you're a documentary filmmaker, so you don't have to make considerations of how much violence to include. But in Get Out, for example, that film was 3/4 of the way done, and I'm like, this is a horror film? There's not a lot of blood. And then
they sort of saved it to the end.
Some cut and some brains.
I think it was more horrifying for me.
Fair. That's a very good point. But I mean in sort of the traditional gore genre. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to know if that's a turnoff to you, the kind of the choices that directors have to make on how much to include and, you know, stylistically where your tastes are.
Well, I think I'm definitely not blood and guts type person whatsoever, but I definitely, the allusion to an idea is sometimes what you fantasize about what it could be in your head is so much more evocative, right? And almost can get under your skin than what they can actually put on screen. I mean, knowing how they make blood with corn syrup and all that, you know, is sort of what it is, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're, it's like also reading a book. You can imagine what's happening in your head, and sometimes that's so much more powerful.
Chris, what do you think?
Definitely. I don't...
The gore doesn't bother you?
It doesn't bother... See, I'm not big... Like, when it comes to horror films, I'm not big on the super gore things. Like, after a while, it's just kind of like blood porn. It's not...
Yeah.
It's not... original.
And that's why I was glad this film was not at all blood porn. Mm-hmm. To Linda's point there, you know, I apparently was the last person I would be the last person to pick up on what the twist is in a film like this. Apparently, Chris was on Travis who called. You guys were all in on this 20, 30 minutes in. Linda and I are sitting there like what? 90 minutes in going, so what exactly is happening? Mm-hmm. Oh. But once you do know that, I don't need to see, spoiler alert, I don't need to see a cutting of a head. I need to see someone who I've been watching all film, and all of a sudden they take off their hat and you see a scar and you go, oh, yeah. Yes, I see what they have done. Mm-hmm. And that's powerful to me, seeing what kind of, I don't need to see the gore. I can experience it that way. So I guess I'm with you there. I'm Pollyanna about stuff like this, too. I'm the guy who's always looking away going, when is it okay to watch? When is it okay to watch this? I used to watch CSI, and they would have, you know, those moments where they're showing how the crime was committed and the bullet going through the tissue, and I'm going, tell me when it's okay to watch. CSI. It's CSI. I'm weak like
that's
that.
That's on network television.
I know. 15 seconds. What do you want to see from Hollywood going forward now, Chris?
I want to see a solo Shuri movie. That should be Black Panther 2.
Yes,
just Shuri becoming Black Panther. This is going to, well, just go read the comics. She becomes Black Panther. So
in the comics?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. Oh.
I did not know
that's...
that.
Boom.
I would say if money talks and it does in Hollywood, there are some spinoffs coming for Black Panther.
Oh, yeah.
And follow-ups, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What do you
I
want
think
to see,
Wrinkle
Linda?
Of Wrinkle in Time
oh,
is going to be huge coming
wait.
Down the pike. That's going to yes. be the next really big one, which is should be great.
So what do you want to see from Hollywood? 10 seconds.
Well, Hollywood, I don't know.
What do you want to see in your industry, even locally?
You know, just more docs. I'm excited about... You know, a little plug here, what we have coming up for the One Take Festival in April. We're going to go live on March 20th with our full lineup, but we have some amazing and powerful and poignant, funny, too. Documentaries can be funny coming down the pike, so we're really excited about
that.
Let's
do it real quick against my better judgment. March 20th is when the full announcement comes online where?
OTFF.org.
OTFF.org. Linda, Chris, thank you. Rob, Megan, thank you. Talk to everyone tomorrow.